amazing angles of the team just rushing our kicker and putting him on their shoulders.
Hello and welcome to the Daktronics Experience Podcast. I'm Justin Oxner here with Matt Anderson. Today we have Katie Windham on the phone with us. Katie is a Daktronics event producer out at James Madison University. She's going to tell us a little bit about her event production experience, how she got to where she is today, how they do things at JMU, and more. All right, Katie's on the podcast today. Welcome, Katie. How are you doing today?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm doing great. How's Matt doing over there?
Hey, I'm doing good, thanks.
Yeah, good, good. Let everybody know who's here. Matt's in the booth, too, just in case you were wondering.
Yep.
Awesome.
So maybe to start us off, Katie, we're familiar with you. We've worked with you in the past here at Daktronics, but for our listeners, could you maybe just give us kind of a brief introduction of yourself and then what do you do?
Sure. I am Katie Windham. I am the Daktronics event producer at James Madison University in Harrisonburg, Virginia. And I have been here for about 8 years.
Oh, wow. It was eight years.
Yeah.
So before that, because I knew you, I think when you were back here at in Brookings here in South Dakota. So how did you get your start? You said you've been there for 8 years. What were you doing before that?
Sure. So I've been at Daktronics for quite a while. I think it's been about 13 years. Okay. I started there as a freshman in college. I worked in a few different areas of the company trying to kind of get a feel for what the company did. And I eventually landed in the creative services department as a video production student. While in that role, I was introduced to our Daktronics event producer, Eric Ray, who kind of taught me the world of live sports production, and I helped out on his shows there at SDSU. And then my time at Daktronics continued after I graduated. I became the creative services video production intern, doing a lot of the similar stuff that I did as a student, but in a different capacity. And I continued to do a lot of event production type work there. I got to work the College World Series on their video board show.
Oh, wow.
Nice.
Yeah, that was quite the exciting time. And then after my internship ended, I actually entered the world of event production. I became the Daktronics event producer at August Danner College in Sioux Falls. Yep. Yeah, and I did that for 2 years. And then the JMU position came open, and I applied. And 8 years later, here I am.
Look at that.
Awesome.
When you were a student, you said, and you started out, you know, working with Eric Ray here.
Mm-hmm.
Did you just kind of go around to the different areas? Because I know in video production, right, you can do instant replay, switcher, camera operations. Mm-hmm. Did you kind of dabble in all those, or did you have one certain area?
I gravitated toward the clip operations. So at the time, he had a V-Play. And I absolutely love that role. I did do replay once, and I was absolutely terrible at it.
I've always wondered how that would be. I've never done instant replay, but I've seen them in the control rooms before, and it looks chaotic.
So, yeah, I'm going to skip forward because you said you worked at Augustana, and I remember when we did the installation there, I was in creative services at the time as well, doing marketing there. I got to go down on a trip, and they put me in the booth to do replay while they were testing it out during a practice. And I think the guy who took me down there said, I think I created a monster because I said I wanted to do that because it was awesome.
Yeah.
Clipping the replays and running them. I remember one where the kid was fair catching a punt and he waved his hand over his head to fair catch it and didn't move and just let it doink right off his face mask. It was hilarious. We put that replay up instantly.
Yep. You either sink or swim when it comes to replay.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It was fun.
and then when you went to Augustana, I mean, maybe the transitions from the student to internship to full-blown event producer, maybe explain a little bit how is that different? Because you said you bounced around between different stations, but when you're an event producer, how does that work with everything?
So when you're the event producer, you are the person in charge. So you are responsible for hiring all the crew. If somebody drops out on you last minute, you need to replace them. You are responsible for loading all the content and the machines, making sure the machines work. If something doesn't work, you got to get it fixed. If it doesn't work on game day, you got to figure out either how to fix it or how to work around it. And then you are also go between with the university. So Our event producers, we work with the university, so we try to be collaborative. So it's not mm-hmm. just their show or just our show. It's a combined effort. So you're both running the script together and trying to make the script come together in an entertaining way for our fans.
And that's probably why it's important during your, you know, having a background like you did, because you're saying as an event producer, you may all of a sudden have to fill out at all these different spots. Mm-hmm. So you have to be able to be familiar with all that, right? It'd be hard to just jump right in without ever having it done, clip replay, or just playing clips yeah. back and areas like that.
Yep. It was helpful to know how that works in a production, because I had been working on a production before. So I had seen how Eric had worked in those various roles, and if he'd come along with those problems, how he would handle them. So I was able to adapt that into the situations I would find myself in. Definitely had some learning curves when I started out.
Yeah. I'm curious about the script. You say a script, people might think, oh, I'm reading a script from a play or a script for a movie type of stuff. But this is kind of a different script. And you're not talking about just the clips that you might play for a touchdown or things like that, but there's probably sponsor considerations and university branding considerations.
The PA mm-hmm. announcements.
Yeah. Can you talk a little bit about how that all comes together?
Sure. So at JMU, we actually, marketing and I write our script together. And our script is an Excel document. They have fancy script writing programs, but we prefer the Excel documents because you can have more control over what it looks like. Mm-hmm. And our game day is actually broken down to the second. Everything we do is planned out to the second.
Wow.
Obviously, things go awry because it's a live event. You can't plan absolutely every second, but we do our best. Usually a script is a document that has like your game clock on it or the event. Like if it's a timeout, it lists timeout. And then it also has the runtime for each of your pieces of content that you're going to play. It lists the order of the content that you're going to play. So what it is and the order that you're going to go in, the machines that it's coming from, where the audio is coming from. And our scripts, we combine our script all into one. So it also does have the PA read on it as well. So pregame is scripted down to the second because it's pretty easy to script pregame. And then once we get in game, we script out all of our media timeouts and all of our breaks down to the second, and we rearrange as needed. And then we have all our case-by-case scenario stuff written out as well. And marketing and I get together usually on a Monday or Tuesday of game week and kind of put our flow together and figure out how all the pieces fit.
Yeah, because the timing's got to be really important. If you're doing promotions during a timeout between quarters, it's like it has to be within that amount of time.
That is always the fun part because you can plan, okay, this promotion's going to take 60 seconds or 90 seconds, but then all of a sudden your on-field MC does a 30-second intro that you weren't expecting, and now you've got to adjust that time. Ugh. And they're a red hat on the field, so you only have so and so much time to get done.
And that's when everyone's just going nuts on the headsets, trying to figure out, like, because you got to communicate with people that aren't right next to you, right?
Yeah, I'm sure the refs don't like waiting for you guys to finish your promotion to get on with the game.
They don't. It varies from red hat to red hat. We have gotten ourselves in a bind before because sometimes the people who are running the on-field promotions are not on headset with you. You're on headset with somebody else. Oh, so trying to relay that message to them that we need to wrap up doesn't go the best sometimes. So we have had some red hats that have very kindly waited for us to finish.
So the red hat is the red hat a referee that's kind of in charge of, here's the time between the start and stop of play?
Yeah, so the red hat is the person who determines, but he communicates between the referees and like the TV or the production on how long the media timeouts are and when they happen. So his job is to communicate with the TV truck or the production, whoever is in charge of that, saying, hey, after this kick, we want to go media. Okay. And then your media timeout durations are already determined. So then he'll go out and, you know, the white hat will acknowledge the media the red hat, and he will go out there and he will wait until you give him your 30-second warning and your 15-second warning, and then your media timeout's over.
See, I'm learning all of this.
This is fantastic because I'm seeing the confused look on Matt's face when he hears red hat and white hat. I'm like, we need to clarify this.
I was glad you asked. I go, I should know this? I don't know if
I saw the look and I said, I've got to ask this. This is going to be great.
That's awesome. I just always figured it was straight with a referee on field. I didn't even think about like a liaison ref almost between your group and them. So,
There's always an additional person there to help with that.
Red hats and white hats.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So we've been talking football here. What other sports do you cover on campus?
So for the longest time when I got here, I was football only. Okay. And then in the past couple of years, we have added a board at volleyball. So I am responsible for the show and the content at volleyball as well. It's a much smaller show, obviously, because it's volleyball. But we don't run live cameras over there. It is just graphics only. So it's a one-man show.
Okay.
We have a board over at Swim and Dive, but I'm not really involved with that show because Swim and Dive is a bit of a different beast. Mm-hmm. But I do support that in a technical capacity. So if something is wrong over there and not working quite right, I'll go over and test it out and fix it. Or if we need to train somebody on how to operate the system, I will do that. Those are really all we have on campus for video boards at the moment. Our basketball arena still has fixed digits in it. We are building a new arena that will have video in it, but we don't have that yet. Okay. But we do have Daktronics fixed digits in our current basketball arena, at field hockey, baseball, softball, our football practice fields, and then we have some play clocks at lacrosse. So I support those in a technical capacity as well. If something breaks over there, usually facilities gives me a call and says, "Hey, Katie, this isn't working quite right. Do you have any ideas on how to fix it?" I usually go over, check it out. If I can fix it, I fix it. If I can't, I call into tech ops and they help us out. But facilities doesn't have to do any of that because I'm on site.
Yeah, so you're more than just an event producer. It sounds like you're kind of a...
One might say you wear multiple hats.
Even different colors.
Like white and red hats?
Yeah.
Does that not apply here?
Or a blue hat with the DAC logo on it?
Those are the different sports that you cover. Is there anything else mm-hmm. that pops up throughout the year, maybe not sports related? Like top of mind, I think of graduations, or do you get involved whenever recruits come in to turn on the boards or anything like that?
Yeah. So we do have a few yearly events we do in the stadium. Every fall we do a new student pep rally, which we run a couple cameras and do some graphics at. And then every October we host a very large high school marching band competition.
Okay.
Which is a very long 18-hour day of high school bands competing.
18 hours?
Yeah, it's a long day.
Whoa.
But it's a lot of fun. It's a really easy event. The crew really likes to work it. We run three cameras. We do graphics. It's a nice, fun, easy day.
Okay.
We host three commencement ceremonies in the spring in the stadium. So those are really high level, really involved. There are a few one-off events, maybe with recruits or something football's doing, that varies from coaching staff to coaching staff. But one of the unique things we have, whether good or bad, is our club AV system is set up kind of in a goofy way. So whenever there's an event down in our club space and they want to put graphics on the TV, all of that has to flow through our control room in the press box. So I have to be involved with that graphic process.
Hmm.
So we host a lot of little one-off events for that type of thing.
Okay.
You mentioned your crew, so maybe how does it look for a football game? How many different people do you have on your staff? And then I'd imagine that obviously varies amongst these other kind of one-off events that you just mentioned.
Yeah, so football is obviously our big one. Our staff is 15 or 16 crew members. Wow. We run five cameras. We have quite a few grips. We have a few different show control operators, a couple of replay operators, the director of TV, engineer, all of those positions. And then our one-off events, it really varies. High school, the band competition, I actually run two crews because it's too long of a day for one crew to work. So we usually split that up into two crews and we run a few cameras and a few graphics there. But most of the really one-off events, it's just me.
How about for the volleyball matches? You mentioned you don't do live video over there. Is that just you or is that?
So I actually have an operator over there that does volleyball for me, which is awesome.
Nice.
So I make all the content for volleyball and I can go over and I like set up things and I do the troubleshooting over there. But I have an operator who comes in for the matches. They will load all the content and they will run the actual event for me.
Right. Okay. So and you're a full-time person that's on site there in your crew. Are they full-time as well or are they part-time or how do you fill out that crew?
So my crew is all freelance operators.
Okay.
And it's a mix of local area professionals and students. About a quarter to a third of my football crew is students. And it really just depends on who works what event, depending on what their skill set is and what I need.
Yeah, I wonder how the university likes having the students do there. I imagine they're getting some pretty good hands-on experience for college football games, right?
Yes, they are. And we actually, so within our athletics communications department, they have a video segment. They're not quite their own department yet, but they're getting there. And they're responsible for all of like the social media content and all the hype videos and filming all of the JMU sports events, so the 18 sports. And I work really closely with them on the student crews because I'm football, and football is really hard to teach students how to do more advanced level stuff. I can't just throw a student in a director position or a replay position or a field camera position because it's football. There's no time to teach during football. Yeah. So it's nice to work with them because they have them filming soccer events and volleyball events for highlights. So those kids are getting their hands-on experience there, and then I can start to move them into more advanced roles on my crew.
I was going to say, that's how do you get them up to speed on something like that when you know that each game is way too important? But yeah, if they're doing highlight videos and all that other stuff, that's got to be a great way to get that.
Yeah.
And you probably are able to relate to that, right? I mean, we've already talked about you being a student and an intern starting out in that area, so it's – I imagine you've gone through it all, so it kind of helps when you're working with them and explaining things.
Yeah. And I kind of know where they've been. It's really exciting when you get a student who just wants to learn. They don't care what they have to do. They don't care if they have to grip all of football because they don't have the experience to do anything else. I really like working with those students because they're just hungry for knowledge. And that's really exciting.
And see, I know what grip is, Justin, so don't look at me like with a red hat thing. Do you know what grip means?
Yeah.
What a grip person is?
Yes.
What?
Not as confidently, but I'm guessing they're the ones that are pulling the cords around to make sure nobody trips.
Oh, wow.
Correct.
Yeah. Dang it.
I got a point today.
I was hoping to get back on the redhead comment, but I whiffed on that one. So when you have the footballs are your big events, Katie, what does a typical game day look like for you? Let's say it's like an early afternoon game. Do you gotta get in there really early in the morning? Like, what does that day look like from beginning to end?
Oh, man. I really despise anything earlier than a 1:30 kick because I am at the stadium stupid early. Usually 3:30 is our standard kickoff time. I usually start my day around 9 o'clock. I go into the office and I print all of my game day documents. A little different from most sites, I actually print our scripts. Marketing usually does that at other sites, but I am on site way earlier than marketing is, or I don't see them. So I just have all the scripts so I can do everything I need to do for my prep. So I finish those documents, I print them, and then I come to the stadium. The first thing I do is take the truck dock stuff down to the TV truck so they can start testing their score bug stuff. And then I come back up to the control room and I sit down with the scripts and I go through the entire show. I click every button we're going to click for our show.
You got to make sure when no one's there that it works so that, yeah.
Yep. And I let all of the videos play out. So it does take some time. It probably takes an hour, hour and a half to run through the show in its completion because I want to make sure my videos play through completely. It's a good test on the system to make sure, you know, the system's operating the way it should. To make sure there's nothing wrong with the video that I didn't miss when I was testing earlier in the week. So I do that. And then there's usually a little bit of downtime before my crew shows up. I take care of, you know, if I have to set any equipment out or set anything up or test anything. And then my first wave of crew shows up. I have my engineer and camera crew come in a little early because they have some long cable runs they need to do. They get their equipment set up. We chat real quick. I send them down to the field. They do their thing down there. We make sure their signals work because they are connected via fiber, and fiber can be kind of finicky sometimes.
Yep.
And then usually by the time that's done, the rest of the crew comes in and we have a meeting in the control room and we talk about the entire script. We break it down from pregame to this timeout, this timeout, this timeout. And we talk about how things are going to flow. We talk about where the on-field promotion is going to be or where this recognition is going to be, where I need the cameras to be for that. If we're doing something with graphics that integrates kind of interestingly, we will talk about those graphics. We will look at those graphics. We will explain all of that. So it just kind of gives everybody a heads up as to what to expect for the day. And then we have a small break. Everybody gets to eat lunch, their favorite time of the day.
Yep.
And I have a scheduled 30 to 40 minutes of downtime in there just in case something did go awry during our setup. We have time to troubleshoot it and fix it. And most of the time we don't have to use it, but when we do use it, it is really nice to have. And then our show starts, the board goes live about 60 minutes before kick. We start filming warmups at 45 minutes before kick, and our show really kicks off at around 20 minutes before kick when the band show starts.
Okay. That sounds like a lot of preparation going on there.
Yes. And then once our show starts, I'm kind of a unique person as I run the show here at JMU. I coordinate with marketing on it, but most places marketing calls the show, but it just for some reason has worked out better here for me to call it. It's something we kind of fell into when I came to site.
So they got confidence in you, Katie. That's what that is.
Yeah.
I was just trying to make it sound good. There.
A confident agreement there. Yeah.
Yeah.
You for get better me. Or for worse, I guess.
You have to or you get to. Right? Yeah.
I get to.
You get to.
There you go.
And it works out really well because marketing is usually, we do so many on-field recognitions here. The marketing is usually busy shuffling people on-field or off-field for the next recognition or the next presentation. So they don't really have time to pay super close attention to the board and the script to make sure we're, you know, we're hitting this, we're hitting this, we're hitting this. So that's something I do from the press box.
So it's got that helps them out, just like you're saying, that there's a lot of other things that they're worrying about on game day. So being able to have someone like yourself that can take care of all that, then that's just one less thing for them to worry about.
Yep. And it's really rather hectic because I'm on headset. We have multiple different channels on our headset, thank goodness. But on one of our channels, I'm talking to marketing on the field. I'm talking to marketing in the booth who's sitting with the PA announcer and also running sound. I'm talking to the soundboard operator for the stadium, and I'm talking to the band. So just that small group of people is all helping coordinate our script or our show. And then on a separate channel, I have my entire crew, which I'm also talking to.
You're just switching back and forth. Was it like just buttons on like on the headset itself? Like you got to be really quick at switching back and forth between these, huh?
Yep. So oftentimes I don't talk to my crew on the headset. I just yell at my control room staff. I know that sounds terrible, but it's just easier for me to pull the headset off my ear and just yell down the table at them like, hey, we're going to do this. This is coming up next.
Nice.
And I really only get on headset to talk to the cameras if we have something coming up and I need them to be where they are, they aren't where they are, or just to chime in and say, you know, you guys are doing great. Keep it up. But yeah.
So if you need to call a camera to go to a different direction or go to a different spot on the field, what would that call sound like coming from you? I'm asking like a quarterback for a play call here.
Yeah.
So usually I'm yelling at the wireless camera because they are all over the stadium.
Yeah.
Their job, they have to be on the field for all recognitions, but they also need to be in the stands to get all of our crowd shots. So they are a very busy camera. And usually it's, camera four, I need you on the field in like 30 seconds. Go. Camera four, you need to move faster.
When there's a wireless camera, obviously there's no cords. I think of the grip, right? Do they have anyone with them still going around to make sure like they're not walking into people, or are they really by themselves with the camera?
So they used to. Last year we changed it so they didn't.
Okay.
I either way it worked, I think. It was nice when they did have somebody with them because I also give all my cameras a cheat sheet of, okay, this quarter, this timeout, I need you here. So it was nice when they had somebody with them that they could have somebody, you know, stay in their ear. Hey, we have this coming up. You need to start getting to the field. Okay. And just carrying spare batteries. That's super helpful. But last year we went away from that for a couple different reasons and it seemed to work out pretty well. Yeah.
I was going to say it's similar to the person. There's always like a person if you watch following a mascot around, especially if it's one of those like awkward mascots that you can tell like, the person can't really see very well.
Can't
inside.
See their feet. Don't know what they're tripping over. Yeah,
there's always someone like back corner following them around to tell them where they have to go and guide and make sure that people are aware that they're coming through that area.
So we actually do a mascot race.
Okay.
Oh, yeah.
It is the Aramark food race. And we have five different mascots dressed up as food items.
All right.
And they do some sort of race. It's usually, what do we make them do? An 80-yard dash. We start at the 20-yard line. They have to go into the end zone. And whoever wins is the concession stand special in the fourth quarter.
Okay, so I'm picturing like a pizza or probably a thing of pop running around.
Yep, so it's pizza, popcorn, cheeseburger. There is a Pepsi can now. And I can't remember what the other one is. And then sometimes our school mascot, Duke Dog, runs as well.
Okay. I say 80 yards in a mascot outfit sounds terrible, especially if it's like middle of the day on a hot Saturday. That sounds absolutely terrible.
Yep.
Do they just collapse sometimes?
Sometimes, yes.
I'm done.
They're all marketing students in the mascot suit. So that is a perk of being a marketing student. You get to dress up as pizza. Oh, the other one's lobster.
Oh, you got lobster at your football games.
Suppose you are out east. We would never have thought lobster here in South Dakota for any kind of concession food. If it was, so I'd be a little sketched out.
Lobster is our joke. Lobster never wins.
is it just a really awkward costume? Or what?
Yeah. Well, so to kind of break the awesomeness of the race, everything's predetermined.
Oh, spoiler.
Yeah, I know.
But you're not going to tell Aramark, who always wins.
Aramark determines what's going to go on sale during the fourth quarter. It's part of our promotion tie-in that we do. So lobster never wins because we don't sell lobster.
Okay, so that's the joke.
But we did do it one game. They did do lobster rolls in the fourth quarter one game.
Did everyone go nuts when the lobster
won? They sold out right away.
That's
and
awesome.
Everybody loved that lobster won. They thought it was a joke at first because lobster never wins.
See, it's okay to talk like this because I don't think kids listen to this podcast because it's always, you know, mascots. Are really, don't ever take your helmet off or whatever and show
it.
But yeah, we've been talking a lot of the behind the scenes and preparing for all of this type of stuff and maybe even the video of it. But I'm sure there's a lot of that content you said that you load up there. Where does that content come from? I'm sure you've got somebody making this content for you for a touchdown animation or things like that.
Yep. So we work very closely with Daktronics Creative Services. So they make a large part of our content. Some of like our videos, like our hype videos and stuff, those are done in-house. But anything that's a really fancy animation or even just the backgrounds for like the text stuff that we type out, Creative makes all of that for us.
Nice. So you work with the Daktronics Creative Services rep or animator, whoever it may be, and then with marketing, or kind of like how is your role bridging that, I guess?
Yeah.
So I'm kind of the go-between between the two of them. We are kind of unique as JMU starts planning for football in February, which is crazy.
Yeah.
But we take a good 2 months. We meet bi-weekly, and we take 2 months to look at examples of like everything we can find. And we try to figure out what are we going to do for the next year's content. So like next year, we're going to start planning a new board look. So we will talk heavily about what does that look like. This year, we're kind of in a play year. It's the last year of our current look. So it's what fun features do we want to do this fall? What are we missing from our show that could make it that much better? So we spend a couple months looking into that, figuring out what that is, looking at a lot of examples, figuring out what we like, what we don't like. And then we go to creative and say, hey, we're kind of looking to do something like this. Do you have any examples of what you guys do? And so we take those back and we look at those again. And we get our list together and we send it over to creative about late April. So we try to hit the lull the creative ends up in after baseball season. They get through their big wave of baseball content and they have a small lull in there where they don't have a lot going on. We try to hit them then to get our content made.
Okay. So when you're deciding on that new look, you said you work with marketing, you probably work with the athletic side. Is it a couple people in there, or is it a couple departments that come together and agree on that?
Yes. So we have, I think it's 4 or 5 people. The group's a little bigger right now just because we are breaking in some new people this year. But it's usually our marketing director, our director of video content. We have our social media assistant director in there just because that person knows JMU. They have a sense for design. And then we have a couple extra people in there sometimes. Sometimes we bring the assistant director of marketing in just to learn how the process works. And that's our core group. And that's who's deciding what goes on the board.
Okay. I'm sure there's different, it works different everywhere. It's just, we wanted to hear some of those titles to see kind of how it might come together at some schools.
Sure.
And I gotta imagine it's like the marketing reps are also the middle ground between, you know, a new sponsor they may have gotten, whether it's like a new car dealership or something. Because I know some schools, someone comes in with a sponsorship agreement and they may have ideas like, hey, I want to do this during a timeout, or I've seen you guys do this because I've been at your game, so how do I get involved in that? So I imagine there's going to be some brainstorming with them about different promotional ideas.
Yep, and I actually work really closely with our sponsorship department as well.
Okay.
So in theory, at JMU, they're never supposed to sell anything without talking to us first.
Okay.
Obviously, things slip through the cracks sometimes, but we really like to collaborate on that because they want to have awesome feature stuff to put their sponsors on, and we want to have awesome, entertaining content in our show. We have actually moved away from commercials. We do not play a commercial in our show.
Okay.
Everything we do is either a sponsored prompt or a sponsored feature or an on-field promotion or logos on the board. It's all fully integrated into what we do. So as part of those planning meetings we do for content, we're also thinking about, okay, is this something we could sponsor? Is this something we want to sponsor? I know this year the big push is thinking of new, fun on-field promotions we can do. We kind of hit a lull here at JMU and doing the same thing over and over and over mm-hmm. again. So we're trying to think of creative ways that we can make it entertaining and fun and still have a sponsor associated to it.
So when you're looking for those different ideas, you said you look at a whole bunch of different things in those meetings from February to April, trying to find different ideas. Do you talk to other producers that are out there at different schools to get different ideas?
Yep. So there are actually a few of us Daktronics event producers, and we meet weekly, actually. We have a Monday morning meeting every week, and we cover a lot of different things. It varies from just getting caught up on what's happening around Daktronics. You know, if we're putting out a new product or something, we're learning about that. Or if there's new features in our software, we're learning, you know, how to integrate those or how they actually work. And we're also, you know, we can escalate any issues we have on site. So if, you know, one of our sites is having a problem, we can go and tell our supervisor and our crew lead, and they will go to the next meeting and continue to escalate that internally for us. But we also talk about, hey, we did this really cool thing last weekend and our fans loved it.
Nice.
I know Florida shared some of that. Georgia shared some of that. It's just really neat to hear what worked at certain sites and what didn't work at other sites.
I'd say the term I think I've used before, too, when we talk to other event producers is idea hacking.
Yeah.
And that's something I hear a lot about, whether it's colleges, you know, minor league, yep. major league, whenever people from marketing or event producers get together, it's one of those. You're competing for fans to come to your stadium.
Yep.
So a college on the West Coast doesn't care as much. You stole their idea because you're not going for the same audience.
Right.
Yep. And we at JMU, we have a tendency to look more towards the professional teams, the NFL, the MLB. We like a lot of what baseball does. Sometimes it doesn't always translate to football, unfortunately. And then we're looking to the higher level schools like the Minnesotas, the Georgias, the Floridas. We're looking to see what those guys are doing. And that's kind of where we compare ourselves with our show.
So we've had a lot of different event producers, and not a lot different. I guess we've had, like, you know, Mark Eisenstadt's been on the podcast, mm-hmm. Steve Ackerman.
Mm-hmm.
Mike Dewsnap, who used to be one of our event productions.
Yeah.
So yeah,
yep.
It's always interesting hearing everyone else's take on the benefits you see from having that network of other producers to be able to bounce ideas off of and talk to. Especially, I guess, if you think back, I'd imagine you probably contribute more to these types of things than maybe when you first started out, right? Because you probably were trying to just make sure you were learning the ropes and everything. And now do you find yourself like giving more advice kind of compared to earlier in your career?
Yeah. Sometimes it's a fine line of, you know, this is how we do it at JMU, and people get tired of hearing, okay, this is how you do it at JMU. Yeah, 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 we're not JMU.
Yeah,
but, you know, we have had some younger event producers come in, and it is helpful. You know, I've learned a lot in my time here, and I've definitely had some, you know, tough moments that I've had to learn from. And if I can help our younger event producers not have to go through that, that's awesome.
Yeah.
So yeah, we're always trying to help each other out.
If you think back on how you were preparing for game days now versus how you did when you're at Augustana when you first started, how different is that? And I'm thinking in my head now, like, what are some of those things you've learned that maybe you didn't do on game day back here in South Dakota?
Yeah.
Oh, that's a tough question because we're kind of comparing apples to oranges.
Okay.
So Augustana is a D2 school,
yep.
So their show is not near as high level as what we do at JMU. Not saying that D2 schools don't do high level shows, it's just they have less resources, so there's not as much videos being done.
Okay.
And their level of sponsorship items is a little different.
Okay.
And I also was not a full-time producer when I was at Augustana. I was there on Friday for setup and there on Saturday for the show.
Oh.
Yeah.
Event
so it was
specific,
a little bit of a
then.
Different situation. I still supported things. Like if things were broken, I would still take time during the week to fix them. Okay. But I was not on site full time there.
Okay.
But probably one of the biggest differences I do is I run through my show a lot more. And that's probably because I'm on site more. But here at JMU, I run through my show 3 times before we actually hit to game day.
Wow.
Whereas at Augie, I didn't quite have that because I had Friday to load content and do a quick run through. And I would do a run through on Saturday, but I just didn't have the time to do, you know, 3 full run throughs.
Okay.
It's even just picturing it in your head as you're going through it, right? You've done it so many times too. So now as you're going yeah. through one, it probably is different just because you can see it happening in your head.
Yeah.
So part of being a Daktronics event producer then, right, a benefit of being able to help out in different areas, but also using the Daktronics control systems, right, as a mm-hmm. part of your job as well. I'm trying to think of how to not say it so salesy, but what do you like about the Daktronics control systems and how it helps you out with your job?
Sure. So I don't know if I can answer this without being too salesy either. But I am a little biased to our control system because I did grow up in the DAC world. Right. I was trained on our Daktronics equipment. I have operated ClickFX. I have seen the ROS expression. I haven't actually played with it myself. But from my limited experience with that, our system seems just so much easier. It integrates with stats so easy. In show control, I hate to say the word easy again, but show control is so easy to operate. One of the reasons we put students on show control is because it's simple. You're not really, when you're training them, you're not training them on how to operate show control. You're training them on how to, your show flows.
Mm-hmm.
You have to show them, you know, you click this button to do this, you click this button to do that, you click this button to clear. But really, once they understand how your show flows, they have it figured out. And I think one of the other things with our control system is it's so streamlined. You can have one button do a lot of things.
Okay.
You can have one button. I can have it trigger content on my 8,000 clip player. I can have it send a command to my switcher to do something. And I can have it send a ton of commands to like the 7,000 players to trigger a bunch of things. And it all happens at once to create one awesome moment.
So you're able to just go into that button settings and then just essentially make a mini script of it within that button, right?
Yeah, it is amazing. And you can even put waits in there. So if you want all of this to happen at once, it can. And then you can tell it to wait, you know, 2 seconds, and then this can happen. So you don't have to click multiple buttons if you don't want to. You can just click one button.
Sounds very customizable to fit the workflow that you're trying to do on any given show. I mean, if you're trying to do the football show or the volleyball show, you can customize it for different size events even.
Yep. And, you know, we tout our control system as being a one-man show, and it definitely can be. But even though it is a one-man show, I still have 3 operators on game day.
Yep. Everyone's got to have their specialized area to focus on, kind of.
Right.
Yeah. Because we do so much. It's a lot for one person to keep track of. So I have one person who's dedicated to replays and prompts, and that's what they do.
Mm-hmm.
Because they're always clicking buttons. And then the other person is responsible for like all the timeout content in the pregame show. And so it's nice to break that out a little bit so you don't have one person that's just hectic the entire game.
Yeah. And you mentioned all these different spaces that you could do, like the clip, the replay, all those, the prompts. Mm-hmm. What part have you enjoyed the most as you've tried it?
So I actually... JMU actually just got a control system upgrade.
Okay.
We have converted from the 7,000 to the 8,000, which is super nice. I am really excited about not having to do AVIs anymore. We can do MP4s, so content creation is a lot easier. Content loading is a lot easier. And I'm really, really excited about the ability to do multiple layers with Alpha. To create a really neat, interesting moment. We've been trying to do that in our 7,000 with limited success over the past few years.
So with multiple layers, what's mm-hmm. that mean? Like overlays or something slides in on top of something else?
Yes. So a good example of it is a feature that we're going to be doing this fall that's a playoff of a video game, but it's also an on-field promotion. And we are layering, so we have a background layer, and then we have layers for a couple items, and then we have a couple character layers. So those are all in separate layers. So we're operating like five different layers just for this okay. one feature.
You did good without giving it away there.
We have
some items and some characters.
Yeah,
and
characters.
Yeah. Some stuff and things.
So you just got the control system. Is that recently, like last couple months? So like have you started to be able to play with it yet, or is it?
Yes. Yeah, so it was actually installed 2 or 3 weeks ago. So
oh, wow.
It's still very new.
Got some new shiny
I am in
toys.
The process of rebuilding our show.
Okay.
Currently.
Is that something that helps too? I guess I never thought of it this way, but right, you've been having the 7,000 players for a while, and you may be mm-hmm. talking to other Dectronics event producers. You are, you know, a Dectronics employee as well. And you've known about maybe the 8,000 players and what they're capable of doing before they got yeah. to site. And so like when you maybe have a little bit of a head start, I guess, when it showed up.
Yeah. So I had previously to the upgrade, I had an 8,000 player that we used as a clip player. So we've used some of the new features in that. But unfortunately, our 8,000 player hit a point where it got so old that the hardware could no longer support software updates. So we have released a bunch of updates and new features over the past 6 months in our system that I have not been able to use. So I was really excited to be able to utilize those things.
Yeah.
You used to be the person on those calls saying, I can't do that because we don't have that here at JMU. So you had to listen to other people and what they could do with it.
Yeah.
Now it's going to be you.
Yeah, I'm excited.
So excitement, tying back into that, what is your favorite part about being an event producer? Because I got to imagine there's a lot of different aspects of the game. You know, you do a lot mm-hmm. of different types of promotion. You're probably, you know, even a fan of the team. It's always interesting to hear that in a control room, right? Like whether it's for mm-hmm. a college or professional team, still trying to cheer for the home team that you're working for. What's your favorite part about being an event producer?
Probably the thrill of game day. I have in the past been called a live events junkie. I really enjoy the excitement and chaos and mayhem of game day. Because you can plan game day down to the second like we do, but that all goes out the window at some point.
Mm-hmm. You can only plan for so much.
So
you can only plan for so much.
Yep. You know, you could have an injury on the field that all of a sudden turns to media timeout. Well, at JMU, we don't go to media timeouts in venue if there's an injury on the field. So we just lost a media timeout, and we need to rearrange everything. That's fun. Or maybe it's an equipment issue that comes up. You know, you have to figure out, can I fix this? How do I fix this? Can I not fix this? If I can't fix this, what do I do?
Mm-hmm.
And there's always something that goes wrong every game. It never fails. Something always goes wrong. And it's always trying to figure out what that's going to be.
The adrenaline is what gets you? That's why you kind of like it? Or just being
yeah.
able to think off your feet really
yeah.
quick?
And, you know, we start planning for football in February. So we plan, oh my gosh, six, seven months on football?
Yeah.
And seeing all of that planning come together on game day, it's phenomenal, especially when all the pieces tie together, the crowd reacts to what you're doing. They love it. That's really what it's all about.
Yeah. So with the hectic and chaos, it sounds like you thrive in that and you're in the right position there then.
Yes.
And within that, have you had any hectic or crazy moments that you really remember that were standing out in your memory as something awesome?
So probably my most hectic moment I have had here at JMU. We had our replay machine, our old replay machine. It crashed 40 minutes before kick.
Oh, no.
Yeah. And we couldn't get it back up. You know, we'd try to get it booted and it would crash again and it would just keep crashing. So, you know, our pregame show is starting to get going and we're trying to keep that going. We rip the replay machine apart. We pull it out of the rack. We rip it apart. We're reseating cards, find out we had a fan fail. So we have this machine in pieces on the floor. We have an external fan blowing on the replay machine.
Oh, my.
We've set up a temporary replay operation station from that spot. And we managed to get replay going for the game while we were producing the pregame show.
You did get it. You fixed it then, huh?
Well, with a lot of help from my team. I had some very capable crew members on the team that were able to assist with that process.
How many minutes was it before kickoff when all of a sudden it was like, okay, thank God it's going to work now?
We might have been into the first quarter.
Oh, wow.
But you probably covered that and nobody knew anything for the wiser. Just kept going with the show.
We struggled with that machine for a couple games in a row. So it was really frustrating for a couple games. But we also had the benefit of the WebStream production shared our room for a little while. So we were able to pull off of their feed and piggyback off of their feed for the few moments we did not have replay.
Okay. So that was a chaotic moment that turned out all right in the end. How about some bigger moments, some big games you've had there? Any of those exciting bigger moments stick out in your mind?
Yeah. So probably the most memorable was a couple years ago. We hosted Weber State in a quarterfinal playoff game. It was a cold game. It was brutal. Both teams were duking it out. It was a really, really fun game to work, but it came down to the last second on the clock and we won by a field goal.
Nice.
And we had a freshman kicker out there and he just nailed it. You know, like it was nothing. And the moments leading up to it were probably the most tense moments of my life. And you could feel it across the stadium. It was just tense.
Yeah, I mean,
and
a playoff game, right?
He nails the kick and the excitement and the crowd shots we got and the shots of the team and the mass rush on the field. It was amazing.
I was going to say, how is the crowd there? You mentioned it was a really cold game, but yet it's a playoff game. Was it pretty packed in there still?
So playoffs are a little bit of a struggle for us at JMU just because, you know, our fans don't have months to prepare for them. And a lot of our fans come from super metro areas. So it can be hard for them to get through traffic to get to us for playoff games.
Okay.
And unfortunately, FCS playoff games also happen in December. So there's a lot of conflicts with Christmases. So we do see a smaller crowd for those. But the crowd that shows up, they are loud and they are proud.
I like your comment, though. You went right to the content side of it. You said, we got some great crowd shots, some great video of people running on the field. Just kind of shows the position you're in. You're like, look at this great content we got from this game.
Oh, yeah, and we won.
Oh, yeah, and we won.
And we won, yeah. We have amazing angles of the team just rushing our kicker and putting him on their shoulders, and then the crowd... Well, our facilities team tried really hard to prevent crowd rushing on the field, but a few got on. And there's some amazing shots from it.
And you have a combination of students and freelancers. Does the whole control room just like start cheering when that happened?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
I was wondering.
We are thankfully, so in press boxes, you know, you're not supposed to cheer because you're in the press box.
Yep.
We are on the far end of the press box. We're far away from the written press. So we kind of throw those rules out the window and we cheer all we want.
Nice. I'm sure it's tough to be non-biased and you kind of try to have to keep that professionalism as you're doing the game, but it's also a home game for your team and your school there.
Or the camera operators, yep. You're talking about the shots you wanted to get, right? And and they're maybe down there getting like pushed aside by students, so even them didn't like hold in the excitement knowing that they still got to get some video shot while it's all going on around them.
Yep. It was quite exhilarating for them as well.
Nice. So do you have anything else that you kind of wanted to leave off with today? We covered a lot of different things. I'm curious if you have anything else you wanted to share. Checking over the notes, checking over your notes.
I would probably say one other exciting thing that happened for me. We won the Weber State game, which then set up an exhilarating game for me the next weekend where my alma mater, the SDSU Jackrabbits, actually came to play here at JMU.
Okay, there it is. I was wondering if we were going to hear that.
Yep.
How was that?
It was a very tough week for me.
I was going to say, that sounds like an awesome but terrible conflicting week.
It was. Unfortunately, my Rabbits had a really bad game, so it made it really easy for me to pick sides. but it was really awesome to be making content and seeing both JMU and Jackrabbit logos on my content. And, you know, my Versus logo on the board, I'm seeing my Rabbits are playing here.
Yeah.
That was pretty awesome.
Yeah, that sounds like an awesome moment for you. I mean, you're passed from college and then at your new job at college and bringing those worlds together right in front of you.
Yeah, it was awesome. All terrifying, right. But awesome.
Yeah. Well, thank you, Katie, for joining us today and sharing everything about your job at JMU and all the different things you're doing there.
Yeah, not a problem. Thanks for having me.
All right, thanks, Katie.
Thank you for listening to the Daktronics Experience Podcast. For more information, visit www.daktronics.com.